A $300 million no.
The Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. The most expensive special election in California history was a flop. The final votes were still being counted, but it appeared Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger would lose on all four of his proposed government reforms. Four other propositions were also headed for defeat. The governor's initiatives included new limits on state spending and on union donations to political causes. Also on the ballot, two measures that would have regulated prescription drugs and Proposition 80, which sought more oversight of energy utilities. Energy prices will be the focus on Capitol Hill today. Five oil company CEOs are on the hot seat in front of a Senate committee. Marketplace's John Dimsdale reports.
Record profits racked up by the oil company's last quarter are prompting even Republicans to wonder whether the industry's been taking undue advantage of fuel shortages. Congress is considering slapping an excess profits tax on oil to help poor families pay their home heating bills this winter. But Stephen Lieb, author of The Oil Factor, says new taxes are not the answer.
Congress should spend more time pressuring these companies to spend their profits developing new energy sources, whether they be oil, natural gas, wind, solar. But to simply take money away from them, I think, is to just make the problem much, much worse.
After questioning the oil execs, senators will hear from state attorneys general who have been investigating price gouging at the gasoline pumps in their states. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Hey, you can't say Walmart's doing nothing about energy costs. The retailer opens its second environmentally friendly store today, this one near Denver. It uses a wind turbine to generate electricity. The foundation was built with 500 tons of recycled concrete. Used motor oil and cooking oil will help heat the store. But Walmart's other green business venture isn't going so well. USA Today says Walmart's plan to open a bank is drawing a barrage of complaints to the FDIC. We've been assured that, for the most part, online banking is safe, but a new survey might make you think again. Here's Stacey Vanek Smith.
More than 35 million Americans have internet bank accounts. Security firm Entrust, Inc. found worries about ID theft had 20% of them using cyber tellers less often. New technology like spyware means breaking into online accounts is getting easier, and it's costing Americans hundreds of millions of dollars. Consumers Union attorney Gail Hillebrand says banks need to take a more active role.
They need to engage in active monitoring of who's out there impersonating them. They probably need to insist that we do things that are inconvenient to us, like change our passwords regularly. They need to stay ahead of the crooks.
Hillebrand says online accounts save banks money and manpower, so it's in their interest to invest time and resources securing those activities. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
Investors worried about the housing market Tuesday, quashing a five-day rally. Pulling stocks down, Home Depot, home builders, home lenders, anything with home in it. The Dow fell 46 points to 10,539. The S&P 500 was down 4 points to 1218. The NASDAQ dropped 6 to wind up the day at 2172. You're listening to Marketplace. Going backwards, a new study predicts fewer American workers will have high school diplomas and college degrees. Amy Scott reports.
If population trends continue, in 15 years, African Americans, Native Americans, Asians, and Latinos will make up 37% of the workforce. That's compared to 18% now. But as the workforce diversifies, it may also become less educated. That's according to a report out today from the nonpartisan National Center for Public Policy and Higher Education. The center's president, Patrick Callan, says blacks and Latinos in particular are less likely to finish high school and college than whites are because of socioeconomic conditions.
Even though it has never been fair, certainly, that we didn't educate those students as well, it never really hurt the country economically.
Callan says if a growing number of people earn less, that means fewer dollars to spend, and that could depress the overall economy. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
From American Public Media.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Fannie Mae, working with our partners to increase homeownership and affordable rental housing opportunities for more Americans. Fannie Mae, FannieMae.com. By The Economist, the weekly publication of international news with commentary and analysis on world politics, business and finance, technology and the arts, on newsstands and at economist.com. And by the Foundation for Child Development, promoting a new first level of public education. from pre-kindergarten through third grade.
This is Marketplace. I'm Scott Jagow. President Bush was hoping last weekend's Western Hemisphere Summit in Argentina would produce an America's Free Trade Pact, or at least move things in that general direction. But not only was there no agreement, there was vehement opposition and no sign the talks would resume. Marketplace commentator Robert Reich asks, what really scuttled the summit?
Some think it was the grandstanding of Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez, who used the occasion to cement his place as heir to Fidel Castro in the pantheon of Yankee go-home heroes. But take a closer look, and you see mounting resistance to free trade in much of Latin America. In fact, in much of the developing world. Remember the so-called Washington Consensus of the 1990s that promised trade liberalization would bring growth and prosperity to South America, Asia, and elsewhere. The Clinton administration, of which I was a member, pushed it. The International Monetary Fund pushed it. Mainstream economists pushed it. It was the logical extension of Economics 101. Trade is good, markets are good, the free flow of products and services across borders makes everyone better off. But it hasn't exactly worked out that way. Yes, developing economies have grown, but the benefits often have not trickled down to ordinary people. Most of the beneficiaries are at the top, among those who own most of the natural resources, most of the land and real estate, and the biggest companies. Those hurt by trade are often small farmers, local producers, and shopkeepers, who find they can no longer compete. And the winners haven't been especially eager to share their winnings with the losers in the form of better education, health care, social insurance, and more progressive systems of taxation. As a result, in many of these nations, as trade has increased, inequality has widened. The lesson for proponents of trade liberalization is that economic growth alone won't convince the developing world that free trade helps ordinary folks. It no longer convinces even average working people here in the United States, where support for free trade is dropping off the map. NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, passed Congress by 34 votes in 1993. CAFTA, the recent Central America Free Trade Agreement, cleared the House last July by just 2 votes, and that was with a Republican Congress. Free trade is good for America overall, but it's been much better for high-wage American professionals than for American blue-collar workers, whose jobs are vanishing and whose wages are becoming less and less secure. And just as in developing nations, the winners from trade in the United States haven't been willing to share their winnings with the losers. So whether it's South or North America, don't expect a new trade deal anytime soon.
Former Labor Secretary Robert Reich is now a professor at Brandeis University. He'll be back in a couple weeks with another edition of The Public's Business. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening.
American Public Media.
Why does it cost?